Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Matt Barr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have another special guest today, Meryl Barr, from the film stage. Welcome. This is the first time you've been on... Well, you've been on the Second Reel podcast.
Right.
But you've never been on actual Fat Guys proper.
Right.
And you're not very fat, either.
No, I've got... Well, I've got some gut on me.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
We won't have to kick you off the show. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Meryl, just to kind of, you know, give us some background and tell us about the film stage in case nobody's heard about you.
The film stage is a film website operated out of Buffalo by its two creators, Jordan Rupp, Dan Mecca. I actually go to college with them, which is how I met them. Funny story, I was actually fired from the film stage originally when they started up in January. And then
This January. You weren't fired last week or anything.
No, I was fired January 2009. I was originally fired from the site and then begged my way back in. And I'm working.
What'd you do?
And I just worked my ass off. I begged every day to get back on the site and eventually did.
Well, no, what'd you do to get fired?
Oh, there was a disagreeing.
I slept with Jordan's girlfriend.
No, there were disagreeings of opinion on Arrested Development. I hadn't seen it, and I made a dumb comment saying that it sucked.
Oh, that's a bad choice.
I learned
now. If you don't see an Uwe Boll movie and you diss that, you're okay. But if you like don't see something that's like revered by people and then you diss it, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, well, I had seen like an episode and I didn't like it, so I just stopped watching. But then Jordan was like, after a couple months, he was like, "You have to see it from the start because everything's a callback." Yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." And I was like, and now I love it. So, Jordan, I would like to hereby apologize for being an idiot.
My God, it sounds like you're apologizing for cheating on your girlfriend. I'm sorry.
But I was really
drunk at the time.
So I've been working with them ever since. It's so we a lot of the sites what we like to promote a lot is our features and our editorials because we're all pretty much all of us are film students on that site.
Yeah.
Which is a rarity. Which from what I'm learning is a rarity in the film. Critic community,
like actually a filmmaker,
right?
Oh,
and like so we do a lot of that. I actually
I got a riddle for you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make a small fortune in independent film?
I don't know. Be Kevin Smith.
You start with a large one.
Huh?
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on and tell people how to get a hold of us. If you want to reach us, you can go to fatguysofthemovies.com. You can check us out on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys of the Movies, and Neil and I pop right up because, you know, Meryl and Fozzie from last week, you're just guest hosts.
you
can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, and you can also send us a voicemail. Call us at 614-388-8735. We won't get it until Neil returns from Sundance after he's... gallivanting around with celebrities. Did I step on your toes? Was there something else you wanted to mention about?
I just wanted to mention TFS Spotlight. You can all check that out. Where Kevin has actually guested twice now.
Yes.
For us. One was on an episode about Christmas movies.
Because I had children.
Yes. And the other one was Mr. Fat Guy Idol himself, Kevin Smith. We discussed him and his career. So go on iTunes, search TFS Spotlight. You can find those episodes very easily.
Awesome. Let's jump in and talk about the movies this week. We only have two that are opening wide. You know, it's January. We haven't quite hit. Usually February picks up a little bit, and there's some cool stuff I'm looking forward to in February. But January, you still have sort of like the low ball movies, I guess. The bunts.
Mm.
You know, if you want to use baseball analogies. This one is When in Rome. It's from Touchstone Pictures. Kristen Bell plays a woman who steals coins from a wishing fountain and finds herself stalked by the men who threw them in.
When it comes to love, I've never had too much luck.
You're open to it, Beth.
But this is what the Romans call the Fontana de Amore. If you throw in a coin, you find love. So maybe if I take a few, like you, some of the magic will rub off on me.
What were you doing in the Fontana de Amore
during my wedding?
Picking up coins.
Beth, we got a problem. If you take someone's coin from the fountain, they will fall in love with you.
That is ridiculous.
Have any men come on to you since the wedding?
Beth. I've seen that look before. You're intimidated because I'm a model.
Now, you haven't seen this, have you?
No. Should I regret that, Kevin?
I don't know. I mean, do you like romantic comedies?
When they're done right, yes.
Okay, what's your favorite? Now wait, if I say, tell me a romantic comedy you like, and you say Sideways, or 500 Days of Summer, I will come through the Skype line and punch you in the face, because those aren't really romantic comedies. So I ask you, what's your favorite romantic comedy?
Chasing Amy, I like.
That's not a romantic comedy.
I would disagree, but that.
No. When you say romantic, like if you say, you know, what's my favorite Western, and you say, oh, Firefly. No, that's not a Western. That's an homage to the Western genre. Star Wars is an homage to the genre.
All right, another
a
one.
A Western is a good old-fashioned John Wayne Western. So
I'm gonna get yelled at for this one on the film stage, but Hitch with Will Smith.
I will give you Hitch, even though that's not quite traditional. You're coming at it from a dude's perspective, but okay. I will let you have that one.
Okay.
You don't like Reese Witherspoon. You like Made in Heaven, Pretty Woman. You know, do you like those movies at all? If you don't, then don't.
I haven't seen Pretty Woman.
Really?
You know, like I'm so behind on so many.
It's got hookers in it, man. Why can't you see that? It's one of the few nude scenes Julia Roberts ever did.
All right, now I have to see it. God damn it.
When she was young. So, anyways, this is a very typical romantic comedy. It's sort of that sweet story. When I went and saw the at the screening, it was filled with, there was a lot of estrogen in the theater. If you know, and there's the only guys who were there were like me sitting alone, you know, looking really creepy, and guys with dates. So, but that's the target market. It's for ladies. It's a chick flick, and you know the story, you know, it really felt like the story was half baked. It didn't. There were parts of the story that worked, but there were parts of it that really felt forced. Like they were like, there was in particular, there's one part near the end where they're like, well, we got to get them out of the apartment, for example. And so they do something and you're just like, that just makes no sense. But they needed to get them out of the apartment so they could go somewhere. And that was, it looked like that was the best they could come up with before the script was due.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, well, we're shooting this scene in 2 days. So come up with something. And they're like, okay, this is our best we can do in 2 days.
Yeah. I guess the concept's okay. I mean, it just looked like your standard romantic comedy. Nothing special about it. And because I'm single, so I really, there's nothing forcing me to go to the theater.
There's nothing. That's why you're single, because you refer to women as things. There's nothing. No creature.
But there's nothing. Just because I'm a Transformers fan doesn't mean I want to see Josh Duhamel in anything he does, you know. So I really have, okay. There's nothing at all that's making me say I need to go see When in Rome.
Okay, I'll buy that. It was cute. I mean, for the romantic comedy, my wife's wanting to see it, and she's a target market. It's cute enough. For that sort of like January romantic comedy, Kristen Bell looks cute. She wears a fantastic dress in the beginning, which just kind of had me mesmerized. And I'll just say, I won't tell you what part was mesmerized, but it's between her neck and her navel. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. Anyways, the best part of the movie, though, is like the guys that fall in love with her, because it's like Will Arnett, John Heder, Danny DeVito, and Dax Shepard. And I usually hate Dax Shepard, but even he was funny in this. That's the best part, these guys who are like stalking her. The romantic comedy part was like, it was okay. It was the run of the mill and cute. But the guys stalking her were hilarious. So I'm actually going to say kind of rocks on this one, just because this is what you can bring a date to, and it was better than Leap Year.
Mm.
So anyways, we're going to have to go to a break. And when we get back, Mel Gibson returns.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Kevin, good, we're back.
Yes, clearly I don't do intros that well.
It's new, like I said, you're a new guest host, so that's okay. We've had some guest hosts be guest hosts a couple times before, so they're seasoned veterans.
Okay.
Neil screws his stuff up all the time. I wouldn't worry.
All right, so what movie we got next?
Oh, the next. I'm sorry. I'm chewing on something. I got a snack at the break, so I apologize for chewing in people's ears. The next one's Edge of Darkness, which is Mel Gibson's first movie since Signs, right? Well, I mean, yeah. He directed The Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto. But this is the first time he's in front of the camera, except for when he was banging the nails in the cross in Passion of the Christ. You knew that, didn't you?
I didn't see. Honestly, I've avoided Passion of Christ still. Like, I have no interest to see. It's not because I'm Jewish or anything,
yeah,
or right. my sort of aversion to seeing the movie. Uh-huh. I just don't care. Like, I'm,
wow,
honestly,
that's a bold statement.
I do not care.
It's not my religious affiliation. I just don't care about Jesus.
I don't know. It's not that. I just don't care enough to really see the movie. I mean, the
it's
South Park. I'd rather watch the South Park episode again.
That is pretty funny.
I don't care enough. Like, you know, Mel Gibson is a director. He's fine. There's nothing wrong. Like, he knows story structure, I think, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, the man knows how to direct a movie. I just don't have any interest in seeing his movies.
Did you see Apocalypto?
Apocalypto, I want to see because of everything that I heard about it. I want to see Apocalypto more than I want to see Passion of the Christ.
Okay. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a powerful film. I mean, it's well made. Both of them are.
Mm-hmm.
What about Braveheart? Did you see Braveheart?
I have seen Braveheart.
You're like, I don't care about the Scottish.
No, Braveheart I've seen. Braveheart I enjoy. You know, it's a really good epic. Mm-hmm. You just people wielding a lot of really big ass swords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there are definitely better movies of that type, but it's a nice addition to the
really?
Collection.
Really? What's I mean, in terms of a sword battle sequence movie, what's better? Please don't say Troy.
No, I won't say Troy.
Okay, and don't say Chasing Amy because that's not a battle.
But a lot of Edward Zwick movies have some good sword fights in them. Kingdom of Heaven, from what parts I've seen of Kingdom of Heaven, are good.
Well, that's Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
What do you mean, like, The Last Samurai for Edward Zwick?
Yeah, that's okay. I love the sword fighting sequences in The Last Samurai.
Okay.
Yeah, but
and Blood
but,
Diamond had a lot of sword fights in it.
Yeah.
and Defiance, that was all sword fights.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, but in terms of Mel Gibson, I like him as an actor much more than I like him as a director. And Edge of Darkness, I think, was a great movie for him to return on. I saw this movie.
Well, let's intro it and play the trailer real quick here. In this, Mel Gibson returns to acting as a Boston detective whose daughter is murdered, and he investigates to uncover a dangerous conspiracy.
There are still a lot of unanswered questions, but it appears Detective Thomas Craven was the intended target.
This is someone armed and dangerous.
What do you think I am?
How's he dealing with it personally?
Emma, Craven's phone. Hello.
Mr. Craven, we have things to talk about.
Like your name and what you're doing here?
Like who shot your daughter.
Okay, now you can talk.
I'm a fan of Martin Campbell, have been for a while. And Martin Campbell directing Mel Gibson, I think, works really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie was really, really good at building a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the best parts are, like, it's like 24, where this movie makes me care about the side characters.
Really?
Yeah. And, like, when something, like...
Well,
wait,
which side characters in the movie? Because it seemed really focused on Mel Gibson's character.
Like, the one... All right, I can't say who it is, and I can't say what happens to her, but...
Okay.
The one involving the car.
Okay. But she was so minor. I mean, she was just literally one scene.
Yeah, but I cared about her, though. Okay. It's the thing. Like, it's like 24, where they're really minor characters, but I care what's happening to them.
Okay.
And when what happens to her happens to her...
Mm.
I not only did I jump because that it made me jump when, but like I felt sad for it.
Yeah.
So all that, and also, there's one thing I need to make. I want everyone to be very clear of who's listening right now. This is not Taken, as
okay,
the
yes.
trailer would have you believe.
No, it's not. It's a totally different paced movie.
Yeah, it's really it's reminding me of the type of espionage thriller you would see in the 70s.
Okay.
Very slow paced, a lot of character, not that much action. When there was action, it only lasted for a minute or two.
You mean something like 3 Days of the Condor?
Yeah, something like that. So I liked it. What'd you think?
Well, I kind of had a love-hate relationship with this movie because the parts with Mel Gibson, you know, as the grieving father, rage-filled, bent on revenge for whoever killed his daughter, that stuff I thought was really well done, and it was intense and powerful. Sort of like the side story and the conspiracy element to it, while it was okay, I didn't find that, like, sort of like the behind the scenes, the secret behind everything wasn't all that original. I've seen that stuff done before. Maybe would have felt more at place if it was made in the 80s. I think it just really felt like it was an 80s themed movie. And my only other problem with it was, and I don't know if it was just the screening I went to, and let me know, because the guy who I went to the screen with, I took a friend, and he said the same thing. I couldn't understand half of what they were saying. And it wasn't because they were talking in Boston accents, and then there was this guy who was talking in a Boston British accent, played by Ray Winstone. Mm-hmm. It was just really, really hard. It's like they mumbled through the whole movie.
Well, yeah, it's a little quiet, but I think I had no problem hearing and understanding what they were saying in terms of that aspect. Like, I think it's your screening. It's just more like probably the theater's volume is low. Like, you know, varies theater to theater.
Yeah.
The theater I went to, the sound happens to be really good in this particular theater.
Yeah. Normally the sound's pretty good in this actual house in the cinema that I go to. They screen a lot of movies there. They have some sound gaffes in that theater sometimes, but it was hard to understand sometimes. And I think it was just, they were sort of like mumbling. There's a whole scene like after his daughter gets killed where he has this discussion where Gibson's character is talking to J.O. Saunders' character. And I literally caught half of what they said because they were talking really soft. Mm. And maybe that was, like I said, it may have been my screening, but that was a problem I had with it. But otherwise, I mean, you're right. It's not Taken.
No.
People compare it to it because it's a guy avenging his daughter, basically.
Right. And also, to put into perspective, if you like the parts of Casino Royale and GoldenEye, where it's a lot of character development and going deep into Bond's as a character and his emotional state, take that and multiply it by 10 and you have Edge of Darkness.
Okay.
Maybe. I think this is really like the first really good movie Campbell has done that doesn't involve James Bond.
Did he do the Zorro movies? He did Zorro.
He did Zorro, and Zorro's okay, but this
is... The first one was good.
Yeah. But he also did, like, Vertical Limit, so...
Oh, is that the one with Robin Tunney and the piece de resistance actor, Chris, what's his name?
Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, so, like, Martin Campbell is, like, he's been hit or miss, but this one, really, I think he was on the ball with Edge of Darkness, and I say it kind of rocks.
You know, I'm going to say it kind of rocks too because it is an exciting movie. It's good to watch. So, yeah, that's good. Now, before we move on, so we got our ratings out of the way. I have to point this out. We'll talk about this probably a little later in the segment. I was watching Gamer, which came out on DVD last week, but I know that you were a big fan because you tweeted out to me. I tweeted out that I was watching it. You tweeted out to me. Oh, it's great. Then I went and I checked on the Wikipedia page. Have you seen the Wikipedia page for Gamer?
I think I've looked at it once or twice.
You're quoted on that. Did you know that?
Yeah, because I put it there.
Oh, were you the one who put it there? Oh, see, that's the thing. You're like, oh. The way I'm reading that, I'm like going, wow. Somebody's like, they're like, oh, well, because the film stage said blah, blah, blah. And it quotes you. And I'm like, is that Marilyn? I click through and I'm like, sure enough, that's you. Wow. So
this is one where we were like begging for hits back in the day.
I uncovered, just as Mel Gibson did, I uncovered a conspiracy.
And I actually got reprimanded a little bit when I did that. Just like, Jordan was like, don't put anything on Wikipedia anymore. I'm like, okay.
Well, it stands. I mean, it's not an inaccurate comment.
No. So. I thought, first of all, let me just, by the way, since you're on the subject of Gamer, latest episode of TFS Spotlight, we had Brian Taylor on. Yes. And we talked about the many ways to kill, I forget his name. The giant, the big black guy in Gamer.
Oh, Terry Crews. Yeah, I love that part.
We talked about the many ways to kill Terry Crews.
Yeah.
but in response to Gamer, I love Gamer. I think it was one of the most underrated movies of last year.
Okay. I liked about halfway through, and then it just lost me. When he escapes, that's when I'm just like, yeah, this has just gotten ridiculous.
I think it's a huge step up for Neville Dean Taylor in terms of the types of movies they can do.
Oh, it's
and it was funny when we were talking about the when we were on.
Oh,
the
wait, wait. Actually, you know what? We'll have to continue this on the other end because we got to go to a break here.
Okay.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We had a leap out of the discussion talking about Gamer because we ran up against the clock. But let's go ahead and finish that. Did you need to finish your thoughts on Gamer?
It's not much else to finish. I mean, I just want to say that I really, really like the movie. I thought it was very underrated, but I don't want to sit here preaching about Gamer, because I've preached about so much already.
Okay.
And I just think it's underrated. That's all I really else I have to say about it.
I will say this, because you had Brian Taylor on, and that was actually a pretty cool, that was a cool interview. Even if you don't like Gamer, I just want to point this out because I think it's important to talk about some of the technical leaps that are coming with Blu-ray. The Blu-ray of Gamer is really pretty freaking sweet, and I'll tell you why, because you get the Blu-ray and it's taken the studios some time for them to figure out what you could actually do with Blu-ray in terms of movies, because what they do, they'd be like visual commentary, and then it's just a guy sitting there going, doing an audio commentary, you just get a picture-in-picture of him talking, you know, which is kind of dumb. Now, they have some, like, Universal has a U-Control, which has a lot of picture-in-picture stuff, which is actually really cool. And the Gamer Blu-ray is really worth picking up because they have lots of sort of branching technology used in their commentary. They have a whole visual commentary by Neville Dean and Taylor where they come at you, they walk up and they're standing there watching the movie. They're literally, you see them standing there and they're pointing stuff out on the screen and they're saying, well, this is cool. And then they cut to, and then they branch off to do a little featurette on, say, you know, the action sequence or something. It's actually really cool. And they also have, Universal started the Pocket Blue format. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of it.
It's, you can download an app to your iPhone and it will allow you to control your Blu-ray player with your iPhone as a remote control, and it works seamlessly, and it also will download content to your DVD, to your player, so if you like have to go to the bathroom, you can continue to watch like bonus features on your iPhone, or you can download them and do them while you're working out and stuff like that.
It's another reason why I needed a freaking iPhone, but I have Verizon,
Well, there you go. Yeah, can you hear me now? Anyways, the other thing is the Gamer is something similar to the Pocket Blue, which is called let me get the name here for a second. But it's the same type. It's called BD Touch, and it's basically the same kind of deal where you can control your player through your iPhone. So Lionsgate's putting that stuff on their thing. So Gamer, okay movie, pretty decent DVD, awesome Blu-ray. Just wanted to throw that out there.
So. And also, like, I've also heard, like, Neville Dean Taylor, they do really good comedy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They always, they like, and also, like, if you know anything about the way they shoot, they shoot on a lot of consumer grade or low grade video cameras, or even high grade video cameras, but they shoot on video. They don't shoot on
They film. Shot. They shot Gamer on the Red.
Right.
In fact, they were one of the first, they said that they were product testing. The serial numbers 3 and 4 cameras.
Yeah, from the information I've always read about the film, they were the first. That Gamer's the first film with a studio backing, like a big Hollywood studio backing, to shoot on the Red. The shame is that Gamer got delayed forever. Like they shot Gamer. Just so everyone knows, they shot Gamer before they shot Crank 2.
Yeah,
And Gamer was released in September. Crank 2 was released in April.
Yeah, and you're right. They even say in their commentary that they beta tested the Red camera, and the Red camera is awesome. And they even made the point that because you can get the Red camera for like $15,000, which as an independent filmmaker is nothing. When you're dealing with Panasonic cameras that cost $1 million a piece, a $15,000 high grade 4K camera is really cool. And the other thing they do, like, and that, this is what I found fascinating, and I'm like, gosh, I wish I was still making independent films. This was a brilliant idea. You, instead of using dollies and cranes, although they did use them, they just put the, they put the, they a lot of times they operated the cameras themselves, and they were on rollerblades.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that. That's enough. That's, again, it's
instead of a Steadicam. I mean, like that's the most brilliant move ever.
That is film student cheat 101 that they always tell you in film school. Is if you, we don't have Steadicams or anything, but if you want the shot to be smooth, get on rollerblades, go down. And I was like, that these guys, like these guys went to, these guys are film school students that made it. Is the way I look at them. They're my, they're like, I'd look up to these two guys because they make movies I want to watch, and they make movies in a style that you're taught to make in film school, and they make it work, which I think is hard to do.
I have to say, when it comes to Neville Dean and Terry, I thought Crank 1 was okay. I thought Crank 2 was unwatchable. Gamer was okay. My favorite movie they've done was actually Pathology,
which
they just wrote. But I mean, I think they're a little bit over intense for me, and they are. If you've ever met them, I met them at Comic-Con a couple of years ago, and I interviewed them for Pathology. And they are intense guys. I mean, they are intense guys, and they're, at least back then, they were really into partying. I don't know if they are anymore. Probably still are, because that's the dudes they are. But but I respect the hell out of them for their filmmaking, for bringing low budget. I just hope that as they get bigger and bigger budgets, They don't hemorrhage themselves.
In that Spotlight episode that he was on with us, I actually asked him about that, and he said, because I asked him, because apparently they're working with Lorenzo Guenatoiba. I don't know if I pronounced his name correctly.
Yeah.
But he's actually shopping a script around for them right now called Cash Money Dollars. Mm-hmm. That they're shopping to the major studios like Paramount, Warner Brothers, and I asked Brian about it because that's a big studio taking them on. Like, they tried that with Jonah Hex, and it kind of didn't work. So I'm like, and he was like, it's going to look like our movie. We're just going to be on a bigger scale. And I'm like, that's something I want to see.
Here's the thing. They're sort of like a Kevin Smith.
They're the Kevin Smith duo of the action movies.
Yeah, because it's you're going to get the same thing visually and style-wise from them. You're always going to get the same thing from them. And it's going to have a limited fan base.
Yep.
But in that limited fan base is going to work out really well. Mm-hmm. So,
box office predictions for this weekend.
Real quick, do you think that Edge of Darkness is going to beat Avatar this week?
Oh, God. Another one I'm going to get yelled at from the film stage for, because I get yelled at for my... I'm so sure the Book of Eli was going to beat Avatar. And then the Friday numbers came out, and it did. Mm-hmm. And then the Saturday numbers, it got rolled hard. So I kind of stopped making box office predictions after that. But in regards to Edge of Darkness, I want to say it will, solely because it's going on 7 weeks now.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't, then From Paris with Love has a better chance. But
I think it's not going to get better. It's not going to get better box office as the weeks go on. It'll continue to drop. It may only drop at 10 or 15%, but it's not going to get...
Right,
eventually, it's going
to... But now it's dropping to the point of like 30 million, 20 million. And those are numbers that are lower than your average opening weekend for a regular movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, Avatar is... It's on its seventh... It's going to be on its seventh week with Avatar Darkness. I think Mel Gibson has his power to... I think he has the power to... bring old people and senior citizens and, 40 and over crowd back to go to the movies this week.
Referring to the 40 and older crowd as old people.
Man, I'm just full of it today. But Mel Gibson has the power to
be alienated in this episode. But old people, Christians, whatever.
Mel Gibson has the ability to draw that crowd, and he... Because here's the thing though, here's what I worry. Because the fact that the trailer sells the movie is Taken 2, that people going in expecting that, and that's pretty much what your college trad wants to go see, they're going to give it such bad word of mouth after Friday.
See, I will say, I think it's going to do well because I think it's got a broad appeal. I think it's got a very broad appeal because at the screening I went to, young people, old people, black and white, it was a huge mix. And I think it definitely, at least opening weekend wise, I think it's got enough that it's going to get its.
I think it will give Avatar a run for its money, but I think Avatar has at least one more week in it.
It might. The other thing is, you know, and I'm going to say, don't discount When in Rome, because the only and this is why it's a chick flick. Oh, people said that last year when what was that movie with Drew Barrymore and like 9,000 other people. You know, it was sort of like
the one with Scarlett Johansson and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Well, gosh, what was that called? Say It Isn't So or something like
no,
that.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about because it's written by a comic that I like, the book that's based on. Oh, She's Just Not That Into You.
She's Just Not That thing was a monster hit, and Pete, nobody saw that coming. So I think January, February, those are times when romantic comedies do well. Leap Year, I just don't think had it for either audience. When in Rome is a very typical romantic comedy. I think there's a shot that could make, I can see that thing making 25, 30 million on the weekend. I mean, I don't think that's completely unheard of.
But enough money to surpass Avatar?
I don't know. I mean, Avatar, I don't think Avatar's going to get a bump until the Oscar nominations come out next week. I think that'll give it a bump, but I think it's...
They keep spreading their average, like James Cameron was on Leno for just last week,
yeah,
promoting the movie. It's like, how much more promotion does this freaking movie need?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Now it did win the box office for worldwide, and I know everyone. I'll tell you, I'm going to say this: as much as I never thought Avatar was going to reach Titanic numbers worldwide or domestically, I was a champion of it, and I said it was going to be a monster hit, but I didn't think it was going to be this big. But even with that, kind of being surprised and recognizing it's not the greatest movie. I loved it, but I am getting so sick of people going, well, Avatar won. But in terms of tickets numbers, it's not. I'm like, well, yeah, duh. In terms of ticket numbers, Gone with the Wind still wins, hands down, everything.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
You're one of those people.
Look, props to Avatar and props to Cameron, props to Fox. 100%. Mm-hmm. I don't discredit the movie. I just get annoyed when people say it's the number one movie of all time.
Well, neither is Titanic.
Neither is Titanic. I get annoyed at that too.
Neither is Star Wars. It's Gone with the Wind every time.
I know. I mean, and there's nothing. I mean, like I've had this conversation with many different people, and then one excuse that people throw at me is, well, then I want you to bring DVD and Blu-ray back to that time. I'm like, that's only supporting my argument because people will go buy Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. Well, but here's the other thing. This is the other thing when people say, well, ticket sales. I think it's even more significant that here's a movie that people are willing to pay more for, even to current ticket prices.
Right.
Compared to The Dark Knight, it's still not beating numbers of attendance of The Dark Knight. It may eventually. But yeah, it's like whatever it is, a couple bucks more per ticket. It's like 20% greater ticket price than The Dark Knight was. But here's the deal. People are paying that much. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. It's higher ticket prices, but people are paying the higher ticket prices. I think that's significant too, and no one ever points that out. Because this is a movie you have to see in IMAX. And I'll tell you, when it hits Blu-ray, I don't care. Now, they are releasing, I know Disney is releasing next Christmas, Christmas Carol in 3D for home digital on high def. You got to have the right equipment, but it's doing the digital 3D, and I don't know how that's going to look, but they're going to do that. So I think we're not too far down the road.
Here's the thing, though. I'm one of these people I said this when I did my review of Avatar on our episode, on our podcast, on our show, that Avatar's 3D hurt my eyes a lot. There were times I saw it a second time because of that net. Then and the second time I was looking in the right places. Didn't hurt as much, but I feel Avatar is a movie that should be appreciated more for what it did for photorealistic facial 3D, not 3D CG, over more than different 3D, and that's something that the producer and Cameron have stated as well, because when they first conceived the movie, 3D wasn't in the cards. It was all about getting CG to look photoreal, and for that, I think I would have appreciated Avatar so much more in a 2D setting than a 3D setting.
Well, you can do that though. You can go see it in 2D at any Cinemaplex.
You can, but like I don't feel it. It's actually I can't, because when I went to go see Legion last week,
yeah,
the theater I went to, not showing Avatar anymore. So they're starting to phase out the 2D. And it's only going to be in IMAX.
Yeah, well, until Alice in Wonderland comes out. And when Alice in Wonderland comes out, that is when it's going to lose all its 3D theaters. But I still think, anyways, we're talking a little more about Avatar than we need to. I think it's about a 50-50 chance Avatar is going to win this weekend. I think it's a good shot that it'll win, but I think that it has some competition and it's been out long enough that enough people will see a diversified movie list. Now, let's quickly do our, because we're way over on this segment, but this is the internet-only segment, but let's talk our Fat Guy Five. These are revenge films in honor of When in Rome.
that giant, huge, you know, got a Kirsten Bell has to revenge her daughter.
I would revenge all over Kirsten Bell. That's all I'm saying. All over. In the most disgusting way possible. Anywho, now that no women are listening to this anymore, not that we have a lot of women listening to begin, although we do have some. We have some fans out there. I can think of two. But the first one is, and these are like any Fat Guy 5, no particular order, just the spotlight on them. Kill Bill 1 and 2. This was Tarantino's ultimate revenge film. I mean, this, I thought, is what he made it as a revenge film, and it's a revenge film from beginning to end, and it's an awesome revenge film. Even better than I'd say Inglourious Basterds was, even though that has elements of revenge.
And Inglourious Basterds is one of the characters is a revenge story. Kill Bill is a revenge story through and through, like you said. So that definitely takes the cake in terms of Tarantino revenge stories. And it's over the top. It's a throwback to the classic Asian style of filmmaking. So just, you know, Kill Bill is recommended all the time.
Good. You take the next one.
Taken.
Yes.
Actually. Now, Taken, first of all, again, we're mentioning Taken partly because they keep advertising Edge of Darkness is Taken 2. But Taken is a movie, Liam Neeson kicking ass from start to finish. You can't go wrong. And he's avenging his daughter. And it's a very good revenge story. It's a very good action movie.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit for everybody to enjoy. My 50-year-old father, who I showed it to, loved the movie. My 16-year-old brother likes the movie. Mm-hmm. I like the movie. It just transcends ages. You know, it's a... No one said the PMRL to deliver a movie that was so had such a wide appeal.
Yes. Now, the next one I want to pick, this one you haven't seen. It's a little bit. I generally don't like these kind of films, but I have to point this out because this is one of those. It's definitely a revenge film. I Spit on Your Grave, which is notable because when I first saw it, it had no soundtrack. It had talking, but it was like No Country for Old Men or The Birds, where it didn't have any music. Not for the same reasons, as I think. Cheap. They just didn't have time to score it. And it's so cheap. And then I saw that I was, because I saw it on videotape when I was in high school. And it's about a girl. It's a rape, murder, revenge thing where a woman goes to a cabin. She's raped. And then she goes and kills all the guys who did it. The best part about it is then I saw it. I was, when DVD was first hitting the market, I saw it and it says remastered. And I'm like, really? This movie that didn't have the money for a score has been remastered? on DVD, so I had to go rent it and watched it again. I liked it. Yeah, I'm not into the big rape films. I'm not a big fan of like Last House on the Left. I like the first one, the original, better because it was just so out there. The remake was meant to be too serious, but yeah, I mean, if you like revenge films, you know, cutting off a guy's penis for raping you, that's in this movie.
Next up, we have Old Boy.
I have not seen. No.
You are behind, sir.
Yes.
But Oh Boy is the second film in the Revenge Trilogy by Park Chan-wook. Uh-huh. It follows the story of a man who is inexplicably captured, is held captive for, I think it was 3 months. I don't remember months or years. I don't remember. But he gets out and he just goes on to try to take revenge on the people who captured him, who made him lose his family.
Awesome.
It's a very, very well-made movie. It's the only foreign film on our list, I believe, right?
Yes. Well, yes. Unless you want to count Taken.
Yeah, but, I mean, okay, let me rephrase. It's the only non-English-speaking movie on our list.
There you go.
And even the subtitles aren't that bad. If you like foreign films, you're going to love this movie. If you love action movies, you're going to love this movie. If you love theater movies, you're going to love this movie. Like Taken, it's got something for everyone.
Yeah, if you're into the French New Wave, go see Old Boy. All right, you can do the last one since this one actually.
Last one is Christopher Nolan's Memento. 2000 film. This actually made TF top 10 at one of our of the decade. Because
it made my top 10 of the decade.
I mean, it's such a good movie, and it's the way the story is told, for anyone that doesn't know by now, the story is told in a backwards format, but because of the way the plot plays out, you learn stuff even though you know what's going to happen. Like, you know something's going to happen to this character, but you're learning more new stuff about this character, even though this character is stuff going on with this guy.
Things will happen in a scene, and then you'll see the next scene, which takes place before that scene chronologically, but then it kind of keys you in on why things happened in the previous scene.
Right.
And, which is, I thought, really cool.
And it's just overall a great film. And, you know, and it's funny, you know, Nolan started the 2000s on a psychological thriller, and he's starting the 10s on a psychological thriller.
That's right. One in Rome. Oh, he didn't direct that. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, go see Inception. Go check out Memento. Just all things Nolan.
Cool. All right. Well, we got to go because we are way late on this one. So when we come back, we're going to do the DVD roundup. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in our fourth segment. We went way long on the last one. For those of you listening on the radio, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and listen to the whole discussion. Nothing bad. I mean, we have really kind of off-color stuff, but we were just complaining, you know, debating and talking about technical stuff, movie stuff, which we never talk about that kind of stuff on the show.
That's what happens when you have a film student on.
Yeah, Meryl, you're ruining the show. It's no longer whimsical and bizarre. It's relevant and pertinent to film discussion. What's going on, man?
I'm sorry, dude. I mean, I guess I'm just not drunk enough for Fat Guys today.
Oh, I guess. Oh, there you go. There's your problem. Well, we got a lot of stuff to cover in this one because this is where we do our. And I'm gonna have to do. You have to introduce the DVD roundup because I have to do my awesome sound effect.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, the world famous Fat Guys DVD roundup.
People wait for that every year, every week, every year. Yeah. For the people who listen to us once a year, that's what they want to hear. Yeah, we're going to cover a lot of DVDs. There's a lot of DVDs coming out right now. I'm not exactly sure why. This last couple of weeks have been really good for DVDs. They haven't been great for movies, but their DVDs are pretty decent. Well, I'm going to start with you, Meryl.
I want to recommend is, first of all, there's a movie, Surrogates. Bruce Willis plays a... A detective in a futuristic world where everyone operates via robot.
Yeah.
Think of it as gamer only taken into regular civilization.
Yeah, it's weird. When I was watching Gamer, I was like, because it came out within a week of each other, Gamer than Surrogates.
Yep.
I thought they do deal with similar themes.
So Surrogates is directed by Jonathan Mastad, who did Terminator 3, mm-hmm. and. Here's the thing though, like I was looking at his Rotten Tomatoes and I started thinking about it. That dude has never really made a poor movie mm-hmm. in his career. He's made, you know, your average tentpole films. Like he did U571, he did a Kurt Russell film, he did Terminator 3.
Breakdown.
This movie is not great. It's watchable. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But you can't look at it beyond that like you would some of his other movies.
I liked it.
You did? The story's a little weak. My biggest problem is it's just too short.
Okay.
It's 90 minutes long, and a story like this, you need 2 hours.
Okay.
To really, because everything happens way too fast in this movie. Yeah. And I don't mean by it's paced too fast, just you don't get enough time to learn anything. Yeah. And by the way, I'm telling everyone now, if you haven't seen the trailer yet for this movie, do not watch it because the trailer spoils the movie.
It does. It does. Now, I'll tell you what I liked about this movie. I like these sort of sci-fi action movies that aren't going to live on in anybody's memory as a great film, but they're just fun to watch. Paycheck is one I like.
I like Paycheck.
It was a cool little movie, nice little action film. It was sort of high-concept sci-fi, but it wasn't going to live. It's not Star Trek or District 9 that's really high quality, but it's a fun popcorn movie. What's your other pick?
The other pick is This Is It, the Michael Jackson concert film.
We want money.
Which I did not see in the theaters. I didn't. It's not a documentary on Michael Jackson. It's a concert film. And it's a good concert film. And
it's for the fans, really. If you're not a fan of Michael Jackson, forget about it.
And it's for anyone who like got into Michael Jackson after he died. If you've never seen a Michael Jackson live performance, it's a
for those 6-month-old fans out
it's a,
there.
It's a it's like me. I'm one of those people. I got into Michael Jackson after he died, and it's a rent. Rent this movie. You don't need to see it. You don't need to buy it unless you are a giant fan of Michael Jackson, which there are plenty of those people that exist. It's a rent.
What do you mean
though.
Those people? I'm just kidding.
I'm just Christians. Yeah, Michael Jackson. Fans.
You're digging a hole for yourself.
But this movie, it's a rent. Watch it and then send it Netflix one night. Just pop it in. Yeah. Play or you know what? Put it on while you're doing some homework.
Sure. Or us normal people who work for a living when you're washing dishes or something. All right, I'm going to rip through mine real quick because we only got a couple minutes left. Whip It was fun. That's out on DVD and Blu-ray. That's Drew Barrymore's directorial effort. It's cute. It's better than I thought it would be. Saw 6. Did you like the Saw franchise?
I only own the first Saw on Blu-ray. All the others I refuse to watch.
No, they're fun. I mean, it's people label them overly done as torture porn. I think they have a little more to them than just some of the crap that came out after him. Fame, the original Fame, not the movie that came out recently, but the original one from 1980 is on Blu-ray.
Oh, it's on Blu-ray now?
Yeah, it just came out on Blu-ray this week. As did Atonement and Pride and Prejudice, two Keira Knightley, Jane Austen-esque movies. Those are on Blu-ray. Southland, the unrated season 1, is out. That's a TV show on TNT. The Boys Are Back with Clive Owen. I have an interview with the producer of the movie. It's on Film School Rejects and Fat Guys in the Movies. The Walton Movie Collection. I'm sure you're racing out to check that one out, Meryl.
Mm-hmm,
You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. That's another Charlie Brown special based on the musical with the animated guys in it. And Sherlock Holmes, not the one with Robert Downey Jr., but one from The Asylum, which is, you know, just a goofy little sci-fi movie.
Right.
And then, you know, I got to say for you, I also wanted to point out I Heart Jonas is out on DVD. So 150 minutes of the Joe Bros.
Yeah.
Real quick, the stinker is I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell.
I need to watch this movie now. If you've given
oh, it's
me a
awful.
Stinker.
Oh, man, it is awful. Made me want to punch a cat. Or a kitten, even. I go worse, you know. All right, we only got about 30 seconds left. Review wrap-up. When in Rome, I said it kind of rocked for the audience. If you're going for the audience. And Edge of Darkness, I said kind of rocked.
And I said kind of rocked.
Awesome. Next week, we're going to be doing Dear John and From Paris with Love. Neil may or may not be back. I don't know if he's going to be recovered from Sundance yet. So we'll see if there's another guest host. Keep your fingers or don't hold your breath. And anyways, contact him from, you know, hey. FatGuysInTheMovies.com. Thank you, Meryl Barr from the Film Stage, for joining
find
us.
Me at, thank you, and you can find me on thefilmstage.com. Check out TFS Spotlight, and that's it.
All right. See you next week.